Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The facts on the ground in trouble spots across the Muslim world are hard to change. But President Barack Obama is trying hard right now, for starters at least, to change the music, the message, the tone of the United States toward the world's Muslim populations. Yesterday and today in Turkey and in Baghdad, less talk of war on terror, more of respect and mutual interest. Will it work? This hour, On Point, Barack Obama reaching out to the Muslim world. You can join the conversation. What do you make of President Obama's outreach? Is it the right message? Can it change the context, tilt it toward a better day? We will hear from three very keyed-in voices from the Muslim world today. But first, for a sense of President Obama's goals, we turn to Robin Wright, longtime diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post, now at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Her latest book, Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East, is just out in paperback. Robin Wright, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be with you.
Extremely prominent venues, very high-profile statements by the president here on the edge of the Muslim world in Turkey, in Ankara, in Istanbul, and, of course, today, surprise visit to Baghdad. How do you read the president's agenda here, Robin?
I think he's making it clear that the words first issued in his inaugural address continue to be at the top of his foreign policy agenda. The speech in Ankara was well received in throughout the Islamic world. It was broadcast live on Al Jazeera and on Al Arabiya. That's an important signal. All the indications are that it has played well. But there is a very serious issue. The Islamic world has heard so often that the United States is not at war with Islam, even from the Bush administration. And that it wants good relations with the Islamic world, that they're really waiting now for the tangible, concrete initiatives that will translate some very lofty words into specific actions to signal that the United States is going to follow through this time.
We'll look at what those might be. There's certainly a lot rumbling along here. But just first on the message, do you see a change in the message? Yes, George Bush also talked about respecting Islam as a great and old religious tradition. Also said, you know, had kind words about the United States not wanting to be in conflict with all of Islam, certainly. But is there a twist, Robin?
I think there's an enormous feeling of relief that George Bush has left office when it comes to the sentiments in the Arab world, in the wider Islamic world, and the fact that Barack Obama's father was a Muslim, that his middle name is Hussein, all of that will play well. He comes in with greater trust. He's a minority. He's an inspiration in terms of the idea of change can come. This is, of course, a key issue throughout the Islamic world. It's the last block of countries to hold out against the democratic tide that has swept much of the rest of the world over the last quarter century. But again, there is a kind of pathology of suspicion when it comes to the United States, and there is an awareness that Barack Obama can't do this alone. And a Washington Post ABC poll yesterday found that 55% of Americans look unfavorably toward Islam, even as the majority of Americans believe it is right to try to reach out and offer diplomatic or peaceful efforts to bridge the cultural and political gap.
Robin, what about the political risks at home that the president may take with this in spotlighting the fact, he said to the Turkish parliament members, you know, I have Muslims in my own family. That no doubt has a strong signal to the Muslim world. What about in the American political context?
That's a very good question, and I think that Barack Obama is probably way ahead of an enormous number of Americans, and also way ahead of many in Congress who are just as involved in making foreign policy and approving budgets as the White House is. You know, one man does not make foreign policy in the United States, and it'll be very interesting to see if he's able to bring Americans along, almost as important as whether he can bring the Muslim world along.
And what about, I mean, the goal, David Axelrod was talking with reporters on the road saying, you know, this is, you're planting seeds here. You plant, you cultivate, you harvest. Over time, the seeds that were planted here are going to be very, very valuable, he said. You've just come back from the region, Robin. Do you see reason for hope in the Muslim world, in the Middle Eastern portion anyway, that there may be some receptivity to a new message from Washington?
The message alone won't do it. The fact is that at a time of economic crisis in the region, that there's a desire for the United States to take initiatives, if not in trying to help change political systems, at least trying to help better the daily life of the majority of Muslims. And in places like, you know, Egypt and Indonesia, where, in fact, Obama spent years as a child, there are enormous issues of impact from the global economic crisis. It's interesting, at the end of his speech in Ankara, President Obama talked about lining up initiatives or outlining initiatives over the next few months that will deal with issues of prosperity and trade and commerce. And it may well be that the White House is looking not just at the kind of political pressure the Bush administration promised but never followed through on, but looking at the more day-to-day issues that may be much quicker in having some tangible impact on life.
Robin Wright's book, Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East, is just out in paperback. Robin, thank you very much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tom.
The president in Turkey and Iraq in a single day today, a surprise visit to Baghdad after leaving Turkey. Let's hear from Turkish and Iraqi voices right now. With us from Washington, Bulent Alireza, director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Bulent Alireza, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
And with us from London, Ali Alawi. He was Minister of Trade and Minister of Defense in Iraq, September 2003 to September 2004 and 2005 to 2008 in the transitional government there. Out with a big new book, The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. Ali Alawi, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
Bulent Alireza, first to you. The president has made most of the remarks that we have so far in Turkey. I'm looking at a headline here from the Vatan newspaper saying, Obama conquers hearts. What do you make of his 2 days in Turkey and the impact of his remarks there?
Well, he took Turkey by storm. He began with the advantage, tremendous advantage, of not being George Bush, who was reviled in Turkey, and whose desire to use Turkey to attack Iraq from the north was rebuffed by Turkey, leading to a crisis in U.S.-Turkish relations, which was never really repaired. The visit was rich in symbolism. He went to the one country in Europe that is both a member of the Western community, a member of NATO, as well as in the Islamic world, as well as part of the Islamic world. And as he said in his speech to the Turkish Grand National Assembly, this is the reason why I chose this this country. Now, clearly, he's gone a long way to repairing the relationship between the U.S. and Turkey, a very important country for the U.S., but it doesn't really make sense unless you see it in the broader perspective, which is following on from his earlier messages to the Islamic world, which he underlined in the Turkish National Assembly.
Mm. Ali Alawi, you've been right in the top tier of the Iraqi government. You know as well as anyone that there's more than rhetoric at stake here. Countries can be built up or destroyed or both. How do you hear Barack Obama's new message as it's come out in his messages to the Iranian people at the Persian New Year, in his interviews before getting to Turkey, in his speeches and town hall meeting in Turkey itself? What are you hearing, Ali Alawi?
Well, I think obviously it's a major shift in emphasis and in tone from the Bush years. Bush was practically universally disliked, if not reviled, in the Muslim world. There are certain pockets of support he had. Obviously amongst the Iraqi opposition to Saddam Hussein, Bush's actions were popular. But apart from this rather narrow group of people, I think throughout the Muslim world, the policies that the United States pursued post 9/11 have been universally condemned. I'm afraid I didn't see the anything more to Obama's speech, to President Obama's speech, beyond the symbolic. The main issues remain. the four key trigger points, as it were, between the West or the United States in particular and the Islamic world, Palestine, Israel, Lebanon, Iraq, and so-called AFPAC, Afghanistan and Pakistan. I've yet to see what the specifics of the new policy framework are going to be for me to make basically pass judgment on the new policy.
But you have been right there, you know, in the cabinet of Iraq. I mean, how much difference do you think a new message can make, a new context, or is it just background music? How important is that?
No, I think it's important. Obviously, the military aspects of it. I mean, in the case of Iraq, the United States is now firmly on the path of withdrawing from the country, and it is highly improbable that they would leave a large combat force behind. So that's an important shift, both in terms of U.S. policy as well as in terms of its effects inside Iraq. But the other aspects of it, for example, the policy towards Iran, the some policy towards Palestine, Israel, we've yet to see specifics beyond, I think, important, nevertheless, symbolic gestures on the part of President Obama to open, as it were, not necessarily a new chapter, but a new perspective or a new way of approaching the problems.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about President Barack Obama reaching out to the Muslim world and how his message is being heard. The president in Ankara, the Turkish capital, in Istanbul, and then today on a surprise visit right into Baghdad. Let's listen to just a little bit from the president, his speech before the Iraqi parliament yesterday. He was speaking to them through an interpreter. On this one, he waited for the applause, for the translation to be complete, and the parliament to respond.
We will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over the centuries to shape the world, including in my own country. The United States has been enriched by Muslim Americans. Many other Americans have Muslims in their families or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
President Obama, before the Turkish parliament yesterday, we're joined in this hour from Washington by Bulent Alireza, director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. From London, by Ali Alawi. It may be a familiar name to you, and with good reason. He was Minister of Defense and Minister of Trade in the transitional government of Iraq after the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. He's out with a new book, The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. And right now from Chicago, where he's traveling, we're joined by editor-at-large for the Lebanese English language paper, The Daily Star, Rami Khoury. Rami Khoury, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thanks. Nice to be with you.
You've been watching and listening for a long time. What do you see and hear in the language, the body language of this new American president, and what difference do you think it might make, Rami?
Well, language is the key word that you use. I think we are witnessing a really significant, serious attempt by Obama and his administration to turn the ship of state around, and big ships turn slowly. And what he's done since his campaign, his inaugural address, the Arabiya interview, the message to the Iranians on their New Year, now in Turkey, this is a very clear...
Sounds like we may have lost Rami for just a second there. Bulent Alireza, have you been in touch with your friends in Turkey about the reception there?
Indeed. And, you know, as I said before, there's a great deal of goodwill towards this new American president and for the new approach he's taking. But what worries them, and what also worries me, is the danger of agenda overload for this president. He's grappling with the most serious economic and financial crisis for a long time. He's trying to transform American domestic society with his healthcare proposals and other things. Those are the issues that he's going to be focused on when he comes back. But at the same time, he's taking on this monumental task of refashioning the relationship with the Islamic world, which is seen such great difficulties since 9/11. That is a job in itself, and they're not sure, and I'm not sure, that the president is going to be able to have enough time to be able to focus on this while he's dealing with all the other issues on his plate.
Of course, he has a lot of troops, including diplomatic troops, deployed there between Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and George Mitchell in the Middle East and Richard Holbrooke in the Afghanistan-Pakistan neck of the woods. Rami Khoury, I think you're back. We caught you saying they're looking to turn the ship of state, and then I'm afraid we lost our line, Rami. Is it heartening to you? Or turning the ship of state, it takes a while, but words are the beginning.
Well, big ships turn slowly, but I think he is trying to make a turn. That's very clear. I think he's sincere. I think he understands that there are problems between Americans and between many Muslims. It's not a question of Islam. It's a question of individual Muslims, small number of terrorists who attack the United States, and vast numbers of 1.2 billion Muslims, many of whom are upset at American foreign policy. And his challenge is to figure out how to reconfigure that relationship. But he's actually, I think, he gets an A for effort, and I would give him a C for content, because there are still serious problems in his words, even though the words are very refreshing and heartening and positive. And he has to address a couple of core issues, which he hasn't done. First, he can't speak about Islam. He has to speak about Muslims, individual countries, individual problems. It's not a problem with Islam. When he says we don't have a war with Islam, it's the political equivalent of saying I don't beat my wife. We know you don't have a war with Islam, and Islam doesn't have a war with America either. But there are problems between countries and movements and people. The second thing is he has to, at some point, tell us if he has the courage and the honesty to accept that the reason so many Muslims around the world and non-Muslims like myself who live in Muslim countries, mm-hmm. why we're so critical of the U.S., it's because of specific foreign policy issues. And he has to come to grips with that. Also, he can't constantly talk about how much he respects Islam and in the same paragraph keep talking about terror. He's got to de-link terror from Islam. He's got to be much more nuanced and sophisticated. And I think another problem is the Iran issue. He keeps saying how much he, you know, respects Iran and its culture and its heritage. And then he preaches to them like school kids, saying, well, you've got to choose and you've got to do this and you've got to do that. So there are still some real structural problems. And it was very clear that the contrast between his specific talking about the real tough issues that concern Turkey, and he touched on all of them, the Armenians, mm-hmm. the Kurds, the Democratic Europe, etc., Cyprus. But when it came to talking about the rest of the Islamic world, he just gave generalities, and he's got to come to grips with that dichotomy and that disparity. So I would give him an A for effort and a C for actual implementation, but the movement is definitely in the right direction and should be encouraged, and we need to engage with this process. The people in the Muslim-majority countries need to respond, not just to criticize him, but to say, well done. You know, it's like a kid playing baseball. He's just learning to actually hit a curveball, and he's really trying hard, but he hasn't quite figured out how to do it yet, but he's getting there, I think.
To this issue of where terrorism stands on the agenda, President Obama did speak to that in Ankara before the Turkish parliament. Let's listen for just a moment.
I also want to be clear that America's relationship with the Muslim community, the Muslim world, cannot and will not just be based upon opposition to terrorism. We seek broader engagement based on mutual interest and mutual respect. We will listen carefully, we will bridge misunderstandings, and we will seek common ground. We will be respectful even when we do not agree.
Ali Alawi in London, this president trying to put terror to the side. Secretary of State Clinton has already said specifically the war on terror language is out. The president himself saying here, look, we don't want to put terrorism at the center of this relationship. Is that something people have been waiting to hear, Ali Alawi?
Yes, I mean, obviously, again, the change of rhetoric and moving away from the single-minded focus of George Bush on the war on terror is quite welcome. But I'm afraid that we still haven't recognized the 800-pound gorilla, as it were, in the room, which is, if you look at his speech, if you look at President Obama's speech, there was a certain vision of Islam that came through. And the fact that he gave that speech in Turkey, I think, speaks volumes. It is to do, I think, with the legitimacy, as it were, on the international stage of political Islam. It is to do with secularism as a national security policy, as it were, of the United States in the Muslim world, and it's to do with the likelihood or not of the introduction or imposition of Sharia law. The main point, I think, here is that the vision that at least I'm getting as to what is going to be American policy versus Islam as a global force, it's really a certain perspective of it that, by and large, precludes the possibility of political Islam entering the realm of power, as it were, through the introduction or imposition of Sharia law in a number of Muslim countries. Wherever we find a crisis, for example, in Lebanon, we have elections coming up very soon, there's a high probability that Hezbollah might come into power in a far stronger way than it was in the past. We have the issue of Hamas. How does the United States relate its policy to the Islamic world in terms of the potential continuity of Hamas in political power? The expedition in Iraq, if it had any serious consequence in the area, it's to empower Iran and to extend its reach into parts of the Arab world, which it was not in that scale.
And all of these, unlike Turkey, where he gave the speech, not secular in their government, but this combined, which you're also calling for, Mr. Alawi, in your book, The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. As I read you, you're saying Islam must welcome political Islam, the wedding of religion and government's power.
Well, I'm not saying it in this way. I'm saying that if you look at Islam as a civilization, as basically an outer form of its institutions, its laws, its perspectives on every aspect of human endeavor, Islam has that characteristic that if it's going to create a space for itself and for people who are believing Muslims, it must really express itself on the outer landscape, as it were, which includes politics. But this is not the kind of Islam, whether it's extreme political Islam or any kind of Sharia-based Islam, that's going to be accepted, I think, in the Western context.
And Bulent,
I think,
So I just wanted to ask you, Bulent Alireza, coming from a country which is famously, since the founding of the Republic in Ataturk, separated or tried to religion and the secular state. Do you see Obama as sort of insisting on the Turkish model for the rest of the Islamic world, or assuming it's possible, or the way to go? Is it possible?
Well, what is the Turkish model? The irony is that the government that he met when he was there has its origins in political Islam. Mr. Erdogan, the prime minister, the president, Abdullah Gül, were very much within the
new
movement
wave
that established four political parties that were closed, and then they established a party, the current government, the AK Party, the Justice and Development Party, that came to power in 2002. It has reinforced the growing religiosity in the country, but nonetheless did so, albeit with some difficulty, within a secular system. There are great tensions in Turkish society because of this. When Mr. Gül was elected in 2007, there were great tensions, and in 2008, the party was almost closed down by the Constitutional Court on the grounds that it was the center of anti-secular activities. So
now it's in power.
Now it's in power. It's functioning within a secular system, but nonetheless is encouraging the growing religiosity, as I called it, within society, most visibly through the wearing of headscarves. And yet, people who wear headscarves cannot go into government buildings. The Turkish model is still a work in progress, and looking to it as an example for the Islamic world is not, I think, the right way to go. Now, if I may, I just want to touch on the whole issue of the terrorism or those within Islam who resort to extremist measures, which have been classified by the previous administration as terrorism pure and simple, against whom a global war was launched. Mr. Erdogan, the Turkish Prime Minister, has specifically called on the new president to come up with a narrow definition of terrorism. I think what the Obama strategy is, and it's a rather simple one, and let's see if it works, is to establish a better relationship with the wider Islamic world and to get them to join him in marginalizing and ultimately defeating those within the Islamic world who resort to extremist terrorist measures to achieve their aims and hopefully eradicate this as a problem. Now, it's not going to be easy, and I think while Obama may have the right intentions, I'm not sure that he's going to be able to focus on this enough or to get enough allies within the Muslim world, particularly if he's unable to move on the Israeli-Palestinian issue in the way that the vast majority of Muslims want to move, to be able to get to his aims.
Mm. Let's take a call from Charleston, South Carolina. Tom, you're on the air, Tom.
How are you?
Very well. What do you see, sir?
A lot of subtleties have shown up in your conversations with your speakers, but one thing stands out as missing from a lot of this conversation, and that is that our country and our president and our other leadership cannot be the only voice trying to improve relationships here. We need a very strong, consistent, unrelenting, and clear message from the moderate Muslim leadership throughout the world about where they stand with respect to extremist elements and fundamentalist Islamic politician politically, people with fundamentalist political issues trying to gain power, hiding behind the language and texts of the Islamic faith. It's just as bad as fundamentalist Christianity taking over in this country if that were to happen.
And you're looking for that answering voice. Let us pick that up, Tom. Rami Khoury, how about it? Tom's looking for, you know, moderate voices to respond to the president. What do you see or expect?
Well, what I see living in the Islamic world all my life is that the vast, overwhelming majority of Muslims are exactly what he's looking for, moderate, reasonable people. If you look at the results of this extraordinary global poll that the Gallup organization did, looking at Muslims all over the world, polling 1.2 billion people through sample surveys, they found that there was an almost exact congruence between the basic values of ordinary Muslims all over the world and ordinary Americans in terms of core issues like justice, democracy, equality, accountability, good governance, no corruption, that kind of core values. So the congruence is there. This quest for moderate Muslims is part of the hangover from the fantasy years of Condoleezza Rice. What they were looking for, moderate Muslims, as they called them, to avoid dealing with the fact that Islamist movements like Hamas, Hezbollah, Muslim Brothers, Justice and Development in Turkey and Morocco were emerging as the voice of ordinary people who were discontented but wanted peaceful change and more democratic, more responsible government. And the point that Tom makes from South Carolina is correct in that you need people from the Islamic majority countries to engage with people from the West. But the deeper point is, and what Bulent was saying, I think, before, is very important. The reality, the difficult reality, is that small terror groups like Al-Qaeda play on the same grievances that the vast majority of Muslims complain about, who are not violent people, but the same grievances drive them both, which is American troops, overthrowing regimes, corruption, etc. And the answer is to address those underlying issues: Arab-Israeli peace, good governance, democracy, economic development, and that's how we will move forward together.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Barack Obama reaching out to the Muslim world and how his message is being heard. We've been joined by Bulent Alireza, director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, by Ali Alawi, former Minister of Trade and Minister of Defense in Iraq after the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, author of the new book, The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. And Rami Khoury is here, editor-at-large for the Lebanese English-language newspaper The Daily Star. He joins us today from Chicago, where he's traveling. Here's the president in a roundtable town hall conversation with Turkish college students in Istanbul earlier today.
My attitude is that all these things are hard. I mean, I'm not naive. If it was easy, it would have already been done. Somebody else would have done it. But if we don't try, if we don't reach high, then we won't make any progress.
The president reaching out to the Muslim world. Let's go to the phone lines in Abdi from Boston. Abdi, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm originally from Iran, but I've been in the United States for half a century almost.
Okay.
But my view is that Obama should have given a speech like Dr. King did, that I dream of the Middle East, that one day all the nations live side by side, all the people live side by side, rather than what Bush was doing, trying to separate Palestine and Israel, but we should encourage them to live together and happily ever after, you know.
One big Dr. King-style speech. It's a lot to ask, but we hear it as a sentiment. I want to begin to go down this punch list of challenges, and Ali Alawi, if I may come to you first. I mean, Iraq is right there. It has been huge, of course, for your country and for Americans. Beyond the rhetoric, then, he's trying to set a new tone, but beyond the rhetoric, are you comfortable with the plans the president is laying out? And do you think, again, beyond the message, that he's got the right material sort of timeline here to make progress on that front, Mr. Alawi?
Yes, I think he will. I mean, because, you know, simply because he's starting from a very, very low base, given basically the wreckage of U.S. policy in the Islamic world that was bequeathed him by President Bush. But whether it can, the whole thing can be put on a different plateau as a result of speeches and so on, I'm very, very skeptical about that. I think we have to see specifically what kind of policy approach is going to be taken. In Iraq itself, we still are in the process of trying to form a workable state as a result of the disastrous maladministration of the country after the 2003 invasion. And we still haven't yet reached, as it were, a stable, some contours of the state. And I think the problem throughout the Middle East and in the broader Muslim world is also to do with issues that go somewhat deeper than what the polls appear to show. I mean, if you look at the Pew poll, for example, of 2005, it was clear there where the sentiments of most Muslims lay. I mean, they lay in, in many cases, they were asked whether they prefer Islam or their nation state, and they chose their religion rather than their national status. And they were asked again what kind of law and what kind of system of law that they want. And in the majority of cases, it was in the introduction of Sharia law. So I think we're now at an inflection point in the Islamic world, where it is very likely that if you're going to open up the democratic process, or if you're going to open up, let's say, representative government in the form of elections and so on, that you're going to get parties that in one shape or another are going to try to introduce a different system, as it were, of law and of institution building.
More tilted toward Sharia and Islamic law, you're anticipating?
Yes, I think so. I mean, if the landscape, as it were, was not tilted, if you have a level playing field, this is what you're likely to get in the vast majority of Muslim countries that at least I'm aware of. Now, it may not be true in certain outlying areas like Indonesia, but there is a very, very strong sense that the bequeathed systems, as it were, especially in the Middle East, have not provided either good governing or a sense of justice on the part of the governing order. And this sense of injustice, I think, is prevails throughout the Muslim world. And people look, in terms of the introduction of Sharia, as one way of overcoming the built-in, as it were, imbalances in systems that, by and large, did not emerge in an organic way out of the experiences of
sort of handed down Muslim post-colonial. Rami Khoury, let me ask you about that perspective. Do you see a future that's more Islamic in terms of governance in the Muslim world, and can that both happen and this world have better relations with the United States, or are those contradictory?
Oh, no, they're not contradictory at all. I agree with Ali that right now, opening up systems, democratizing systems, giving people voice will translate into more Islamist expression, and we see this clearly all over the place. But I think it's really important to understand that when people in the Islamic world, when Muslims talk about Sharia and Islamic law, and that this is their way of saying we want justice, we want good governance, we want compassionate societies and a fair level playing field, the reason they turn to their religion is exactly the same reason why people in Birmingham, Alabama in 1956 turned to their religion with Martin Luther King and the and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to lead the civil rights movement, or Bishop Tutu helped lead the movement against apartheid. When you don't get a redress of grievance through the civil institutions and political system, you turn to your religion as a last resort. So I think this is really important for Obama to understand as he addresses people in the Islamic world. He shouldn't just talk about mutual interest and respect and common ground. What he should talk about is what ordinary Muslims are interested in, which is a system of law, of good governance, and most importantly, their rights as individual human beings, as citizens of state of states and countries, and as and as countries themselves. And if he can recalibrate his focus a little bit more specifically on addressing these rights issues, I think that what you would see, and you're seeing this in Turkey, is that people will soften their Islamist tendencies and sentiments if they can enjoy good governance, economic prosperity, etc. And, and these people who are calling for Islam and Sharia law were not doing this 30 years ago, but they are doing it today. So we really need to understand the relationship between people who express Islamic sentiments and the political systems that they live in, and the role of the United States in creating and supporting non-democratic, autocratic, corrupt systems. And that linkage is what Obama is not willing to address, along with the tilt in the U.S. towards Israel and the Arab-Israeli conflict. Until he addresses those two critical issues, he will keep endlessly, like Condoleezza Rice, endlessly searching for moderate Muslims and not finding them.
So you're saying maybe bring justice up as a more prominent theme. Let's go to Muscatine, Iowa, and Sarah. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for your show, and I wanted to say that I think the Obama trip abroad and his messages have been a good thing for our country, the world. It's opened up. He's listened, respected, working people for in the world, I think, and our country have seen and listened to get a philosophy that we can work together with other countries. We can learn from them to have a better way in the world. I see him as like maybe one of the elders becoming a Nelson Mandela or something. I agree with your last worker. We may need to get into more specifics, but I think people in our own country will want to learn more about Shia law, Muslim law, Turkey, instead of being against people, will say, well, how could we work with them?
Sarah, are you, what about your neighbors? Are you on the same, you know, beam here? I'm looking at conservative talk show host Sean Hannity, and he's saying, oh, the president's out there kind of blaming America. He said the president sounds like the Dixie Chicks, and he meant that as a criticism, you know, sort of apologizing for America, that notion.
You know, I don't, but I think some people here, I think the president's challenge will be to address the feelings in his own country, too. But I want to tell you, I think I certainly, and the friends that I've talked to, are excited. It's given us hope to think more of a world working together, not did we win or lose, what did we get at the G20. Look at the relationships he's built, how he moderated between France and China, how he's talked and brought people together. You know, our way isn't the only way. We need to listen and chart a path and then tweak it as we go.
Sarah, so, you're right on top of it, and I'm grateful for your call. Thank you very much for being there. Bulent Alireza, let's turn to another one of these sort of checklist issues, Iran. It's out there on your Turkish far eastern border. The president tried to reach out in Persian New Year greetings to the Iranian people, kind of rebuffed by the religious leader of that country. You know, let's get climb down from the rhetoric a little bit and look at the reality. Do you see cause for hope there? Or, you know, the new prime minister in Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has said, look, you deal with those nukes or we will.
This was clearly part of the discussions that Obama had with Erdogan and the other Turkish leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the Bush administration years, the Turks kept on counseling a dialogue, the initiation of a dialogue with Tehran to Washington, but it largely fell on deaf ears. Now, the Turks are happy that the new administration seems inclined to start a dialogue with Iran. That would ease the pressures on Turkey, because the last things the Turks wanted was a new confrontation with a Muslim country that would put them being linked to both worlds in a difficult situation. They went through that when the U.S. attacked Iraq. But the problem is, even if the talks start, it's not going to be easy to resolve the nuclear program issue, as well as all the other issues which have been on the U.S.-Iranian agenda for the past 30 years. This, the Israeli-Palestinian issue, what they're now unfortunately calling AFPAC, which drags Pakistan into the ongoing conflict in Afghanistan in a very dangerous way, at least from my perspective. Mm. All these are huge issues. And then we add on top of that what Rami Khoury was talking about, which is Obama encouraging internal reform throughout the Muslim world. I'm not sure that President Obama will have the time or the energy or the focus to do all these. And for a long time, let's be honest, the U.S. really didn't care how the countries in the Muslim world were governing themselves, as long as they were willing to be friendly to the U.S. and help U.S. national security objectives. Now, if the new administration is going to be inclined to encourage the Muslim world to govern itself in a better way, it would have to do things in a very different way to what's been done in the past, and I'm not sure it's going to be able to do it.
Let's go to Hedy in Jericho, Vermont. Hedy, you're on the air. What do you think?
Yes, hello. I simply want to tell you that I feel that the entire actually Muslim world must have been moved by the speech that he has made. He talked about his family and how he's really open. And I have no doubt, because it has been carried by all the actually stations.
Al Jazeera carried live, Al Arabiya carried live. Yep.
Indeed. This has never been heard before. It has never been heard before. I would like to add, however, that part of the world, they are anxiously waiting for some specific action. I am sure their heart now has been moved. The next thing now is the specific action, and in particular, the actually Palestinian problem. They know that what happened over there with the very big wall that has been built, and they have taken actually Palestinian farms. They know of the actually blockades. They know all of these things, and nothing has moved into that actually regard. Now, they have high hopes, and I hope somehow that our actual president will be able to move now toward a specific action into that problem. I think probably of all the problems of the actual Muslim world, the number one is the Palestinian one.
Hedy, let us pick it up. Our time grows short, but Rami Khoury, this is in your bailiwick. What about the Obama administration on this front? George Mitchell has already been at work on this, but the president hasn't sort of come to it fully yet, though he said he's committed to two-state solution. He said that kind of in the teeth of the new Israeli government. What do you see coming on that front?
Well, I agree with Bulent first that Obama's got 7 or 8 big sticker items on his agenda, and the Middle East is one of them. The wider Islamic region is another one. But he's got to really prioritize these issues. But addressing the Arab-Israeli conflict as an impartial, fair, consistent, and active mediator would be a huge signal. And I think we're starting to see hints of that in the Mitchell appointment. And there was a paragraph in Obama's speech which I thought was really intriguing, where he talked in 3 sentences consecutively. He said, both Israelis and Palestinians must do this, and both must do this, and both must do this. You're starting to get, at the rhetoric level at least, and with the Mitchell appointment, you're starting to get important possible signals of an American American repositioning as an impartial mediator between the Arabs and the Israelis, trying to address the legitimate concerns of both of them simultaneously and not sequentially, as had been the case before, where Israel's security got priority. So if this is happening, this is an extremely important thing. The other thing I'd mention, and I disagree with you, Tom, you mentioned that Obama's New Year message to the Iranians was rebuffed. I don't think it was rebuffed at all. I think Khamenei, the Supreme Leader, responded, actually saying, if you change, we'll change. What you have now is the American president and the Iranian top leader negotiating in the airwaves, whereas a year ago you had these amateurs, George Bush and Ahmadinejad, trash-talking each other. Now you've got the two big boys shooting three-pointers. And, you know, this is an important change going on, and they're now actually starting the negotiating process, which is extremely important. So Iran is one issue. Arab-Israeli negotiations is another. On both those fronts, the United States can make significant advances if it wants to, but it will only do so by making it clear that it is addressing these issues on the basis of everybody having equal rights that will be implemented simultaneously. That's where the U.S. should come down, and there'll be a tremendous response from the Arab and Islamic world if that's the case.
Well, big speeches, a big appearance in Turkey, and then right on into Iraq, and we shall see what follows, but a fascinating moment, and we're very grateful to the three of you being with us today. Rami Khoury, joining us today from Chicago, editor-at-large for the Lebanese English language paper, The Daily Star. Rami, it's always great to hear from you. Thank you for joining us.
You bet.
Former Minister of Defense and of Trade for Iraq, Ali Alawi, author of the new book, The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. Ali Alawi, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Bulent Alireza at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thank you so much for being with us, Bulent. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.